Welcome to the Vibrant Living Network. Have you ever wondered what is possible beyond possible? What is the thing you've been wondering and inquiring about? Are you just feeling stuck and don't know why? Are you thinking or are you seeing? Seeing allows us to expand and have this other experience. We want to invite you for that wake-up call. We want to invite your spirit, your soul, so to be more alive, more connected. Glenn Brooks has been a life coach for over 33 years, author of Divorced to Patterns, Not Each Other, an explorer of what is possible. He has worked with people all around the world. Join us for a wake-up conversation, a dialogue with you. We will have some of the most interesting contributors. We will be talking to some of the most interesting people and have some of the most resourceful teachers, wisdom-filled people from around the world join us. Share your voice, ask the questions, become free of the known into a new world of possibility. We are going to talk about all the things you wonder about: how to live, how to heal, how to connect, how to love, how to be seen. Your life is precious. Enjoy it.
Well, I'm glad I'm with you. I'm glad we're with you. I'm Glenn Brooks with the Vibrant Living Network. I was listening to the overview of that it's like a university curriculum. It, I want to welcome you. It's Divorce the Patterns, Not Each Other. Divorce the Patterns, Not Each Other. You know, I live my life by imagery, images. And one of the images is what I call a relational phoenix, And it's in my heart. It's in my cells. It's in my hand. It's in my movement. So imagery is probably one of the most wondrous ways we can enter into a different relationship with our inherent intelligence. And anyway, welcome. Welcome, Hillary Lake. I could say Hillary's full name and not feel concerned or anxious. It's an easy game. Name given to Hillary by God, and she's a minister, and that's perfect.
Thanks, Glenn.
Are you Hillary of God in the town you're in, or how do they refer to you?
I'm just Hillary wherever I go.
You kept it very simple. All right.
Yeah.
I want to thank. I continue to thank Lisa for making the relational phoenix. Even though I couldn't do this yoga class today because I was way too tired, I wanted to show people what the phoenix looked like. So that was significant. Oh, I'll tell the story. I was going to tell the story. John Adago is not going to be here till next week. And John's been a student of all these different teachers. Primarily, one of them was a guy named Gurdjieff. And so I was going to tell the story, Lisa and Hillary, that it was one of the first, it was a story that someone told. And I realized when I heard the story, I didn't distinguish between different types of people, I guess, or what was happening. But the story was is that he went to school, and maybe I think it was eighth grade, kind of by mistake, he had a substitute teacher, and the teacher that came in, he described as a pleasant man, and he realized it was the first time he experienced this energy or quality of pleasantness. But up until then, all the other teachers were impatient or hurried or busy, and I realized that in my life, I except for a few people, I could see that most people were very distracted by something. And when they went to work or I saw them, that would, you know, like when I went to school, it always came to me that there was distraction. There was a lot of, I used to say that gym turned me off to my body, and, you know, school, the classroom kind of turned me off to like what my mind was really about. So I think kind of from that, I realized, well, it's other quality of a human being that this rare wonder. And I really began, I did in my own way, I sought those people out. And Lisa, I know you mentioned something that you wanted to share from John's book, because we originally want to call this series, we're going to change the name of it, but originally we're going to call this series either Beyond the Hypnosis of Life, Beyond the Hypnosis of Life. And we're going to change that name. But the idea is that the first time we get upset, the first time we get shocked, I'll stick with shock for a moment, we start to become different. We stop listening to the intelligence. And I was with a doctor who explained this to me one day. I had put together a forum, and Paul Botter came, and we were pretty close. Paul was a surgeon. He had he never thought about becoming a doctor when he was a kid. And he said he fell out of a tree. And I don't know if you can recall this, but when you're in innocent movement, when you're just moving, a lot of times pain doesn't strike you. It doesn't strike you the same way if you know it's dangerous. So he was saying that he had broken his arm, but no, he didn't feel the pain of it per se until he went home and saw his uncle. And his uncle was a doctor, and he totally freaked out. And Paul got incredibly scared that day. He felt pain like he never had felt before, and then went on to become a doctor. And so he told us that day he became a doctor because he was kind of shocked. So shock, hypnosis, shock, hypnosis, being asleep. And this is something, unless there's some very unusual people around you, no one really ever talks to you about this. All right, I'm going to defer to Hillary Lake of God and see what she says first.
You know, hypnosis and this state of shock, I think that's really interesting states of consciousness to experience can bring about great transformation. And there's so many different ways in which we can experience them in our lives. And so I've had certain experiences with them and even guide people into hypnosis. I started doing it unconsciously just through guided meditations. And then people were telling me they were experiencing state of hypnosis. And so we have the power to guide people into these states or to shock them into certain awarenesses possibly. And so there's a lot of power that is in both the recipient and the individual who can create these states. So yeah, it's very rich. I'm just kind of expanding into the richness of what you're laying out for us here, Glenn.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, you would tell. Thank you, Hillary. Lisa, my brain is defrosting. That's what's happening.
Very cold. That's okay, Glenn. You know what? Yeah. I'll let your brain defrost. Well, one of the things that you said, and you left me, the awareness of. You said, you know, you gain a new awareness of your identity and who you truly are, as well as being able to see people who they truly are. You know, what's interesting over the last little bit, it seems to be coming up quite a bit about, you know, who are you? You know, are you your job, family? Are you what exactly is it? And when we were getting ready to embark on this series with John, one of the books that I came across was actually by Gurdjieff entitled Meetings with Remarkable Men. Now, a lot of people would consider Gurdjieff really remarkable. So for him to incorporate all of these different individuals as being remarkable, really struck me by surprise. I thought, well, that arises my curiosity. Who are these people? And I want to find out about them. And as it is with me, a lot of times I don't start a book at the beginning because I like to kind of just be guided to where it is that I want to read. And the chapter that really intrigued me was actually about his encounters with this prince. And it was during the readings about this Russian prince who he connected with. And he traveled with this prince and met some really interesting individuals. But as I was reading through the chapter, all of a sudden I was caught by surprise. It said, once I was in Rome, as I was pursuing my aim, and since money was fast running out, I followed the advice of two young Azers whose acquaintance I had made, and with their help became a shoe shine on the street. And I thought to myself, wow, I didn't know he was a shoe shine. And how, you know, so what was his identity? You know, again, so he had no difficulty, and what was interesting about his experience, he says, I could not be said that my business went very well. It increased my income. I decided to run it on a new and original lines. For this purpose, I ordered a special armchair, under which hidden from I placed an Edison phonograph. For this, I attached an earpiece on the end in such a way that whoever sat the armchair could put them in their ears and would unnoticeably set the machine in motion. In this way, my clients could listen to music while I shine their shoes. In addition to this, I fastened a right armchair with a glass, a decanter of water, vermouth, and some illustrated magazines. And he said money began to pour in. But as the thing, so you know, you can picture him. And this, you know, this was probably around 1878 was the phonograph came into play. So you know, this isn't modern times. And you know, and he said a lot of people would come by and they would look and they would see what he did. And then one day this woman came by and she stopped and she said, you know, she recognized him. And she saw him not as the shoeshine, but she remembered him from her past. And he didn't recognize her. You know, he said, you know, tell me, who are you? You know, she came up and she said, I bet it's he. And this woman, they were two women chatting. And she said, I am that person, one whom you hated so much. The flies which came into the sphere of the radiations of your hate perished. Which really struck me, and you
Strong.
Think again. Here is this man, who so many people revere his teachings, and to think at one time he had been in that space, and you know, so at the time, you know, and then he goes on in the chapter to talk about she became one of the most remarkable women he ever knew, that he actually said that women should model themselves after. And so, you know, I think that in listening to, you know, what it is, whether it be, you know, the viewpoints of when we, you know, we judge somebody or we're more in a relationship with somebody, you know, what are we doing? How are we really seeing them? You know, what is our true identity? You know, are we the humble man that's shining shoes on the street, or are we traveling with the prince? And I know that, you know, in what you're getting ready to embark on, Glenn, with Divorce the Patterns, Not Each Other, you're asking people to, you know, take a moment, step back. You know, you get to this place where in the appearances, you could hate somebody so much that flies would perish. I mean, I love the
Great
analogy.
Line. Great line. Yeah.
It is. Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very powerful.
So,
right on.
Yeah, and I believe he wrote that. You know, I'm not sure what year that he wrote this book. I'm gonna have to find out about it. But it says it was written in 1927. So you know, he was looking back on his, you know, the people he came across. So you know, I mean, you know, and I can think of people in my life that, you know, sometimes you think, is it fate that brought us together and the path that you travel and how, you know, you may not in the beginning particularly care for somebody, but then as you get to know them, you know, they you know, you find out incredible things about them. And I'm sure that, you know, you're just bubbling. So I'll let you share. Are there people in your life that you could sort of ascertain into a similar circumstance, Glenn?
Well, I love the precision and also how you listen. That's a very powerful story. I mean, one of the things that's kind of funny is you tell that story about Gurdjieff is when people became Gurdjieff's student, and I don't know what point in his life, like very like states people, men and women who achieved a lot of status. He would certainly change things to them very quickly. Like if he had a, I don't know, like very society worthy, you know, like society people, people who achieved a lot. He would have them scrub the streets. He would have them become a waiter. He liked playing with people's identity very quickly and disrupting it. And so I love the next part that you talked about, Lisa, that I didn't, you know, what's fascinating to me, when I would go to different places, I would go to schools, and like I went to something called Eureka in New York City, and it was a mystical school. It was pretty amazing. And you go up the escalator, and they had these mandalas and these different symbols that's supposed to awaken you. And you go to a class, and they have this. They taught something called psyche, and psyche was the awaken the body and psyche. But still, it was people were very focused on their individualistic path. And so the people, funny enough, that I met that really began to develop relationships, I noticed would leave these schools sometimes because the schools would get in the way of their relationship. I sort of would notice that. So yes, what I experienced and I noticed that the severity of the judgment in relationship is it kind of seems to go by a lot of people. And I think sometimes the barrier is some of the stuff we learn in self-improvement and some transformational paths. So divorce the patterns on each other is really living in that mandala together. It's living in that awareness. And so the movements and the meditations are putting people with the experience that exists. The experience that exists is that we're in union. And divorcing that union doesn't allow us to experience the depth and wonder and blessing of that union. And so it's some of the most beautiful dialogues I have with people. And I, every person now with a couple is an imagery. There's an imagery that comes to them. And we work with imagery and movement. It's amazing how you can play the harp just like that, Lisa, by the way. Stay with us for more. More vibrant living. I'm Glenn Brooks and Hilary Lake from God in a Moment.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Excuse me, one second. Hello, I'm Glenn Brooks. You're listening to the Vibrant Living Network, along with Lisa LaRose, Hilary Lake, and you. Divorce the patterns on each other. So when that name first came, it came in an inspired moment, kind of about 1 in the morning. after I'd written a piece on it, and I'd read it to different people, and the feedback they gave me was very profound. I read it to Dr. Martha Hackett, a pretty renowned energy healer, medical doctor in Ohio. And they told me that what it shared was something they hadn't heard or hadn't been expressed that way. And what began to happen was, no matter what I was doing, people would call me about, and they, if I was selling a car or I was, this is probably 2 or 3 years after a major change in my relationship. By the way, I don't use the language. I encourage people not to use the language a breakup. I encourage people not to get into that because it kind of reinforces the separation. And so I went to meet this very prestigious lawyer in Boston. And wonderful man. He's in his 80s. He was one of the top mediation lawyers in the country. And what had happened was, He came into the awareness of unity in couples, doing mediation with couples. And he said that usually what it was is couples built up a lot of psychic poison. And as Michelle Wiener Davis says, that the cause of your divorce and your breakup often is family, friends, and therapists. I added healers to the mix because they focus on the individualistic union. So I went to see John, and I formed this very tight bond with him. And I went to see a lawyer because I want to say what happens in our life is that we go into union, and what happens is a lot of what comes up is things that come up so I feel we can get closer. And at times we feel tremendous division. And so I just felt, I guess you could say, pulled by my soul and other people's souls, if you will, to explore this. And so I sort of put this out in a very quiet way, and people called me from around the country to talk to me about divorce, the patterns on each other. And I want to acknowledge today Nate Hughes. Nate Hughes is the former, he did a lot of things at Men Law, which is a spiritual center, Buddhist center in the Catskills, New York. I always felt that the Catskills was a very holy, beautiful place, a place for rejuvenation, good air, and wonder. It turns out that Men Law is supposedly an energy, a very sacred energy spot. So I had some meetings with Nate, and we were like brothers almost instantly, and he was so inspired to bring divorce to patterns on each other. Now we're going to bring this other program called the Vibrant Living Summit. So, yeah, I mean, I think relationship and spirituality is a very confusing topic for a lot of people. I know that if you add on top of that, all the kind of psychological, spiritual jargon and like 12-step interpretation, like as an example, you know, who knows your partner's mental illness better than their ex, you know, the undetected stuff that somehow the psychopharmacists cannot detect. So the language of separation is in the culture, and the script is scripted love, and the hat. So what you said before, Lisa, I thought was really brilliant. So yeah, so when we see each other, we see someone from the script itself. They in a sense, we read someone's script. Unless they're very awake, they usually conform to the script. So in deep relationship, you're unscripting each other. You're seeing beyond. And in conjunction with this relationship where you're having a deep physical lovemaking, right? So there's this deepening thing. And one of the things I'm really attracted to teaching people is what I call Cupid's medicine. Because it's Cupid's poison and Cupid's medicine. So it's with every what I notice in every session is, first of all, people come and they have something to teach. They teach me always, and then we work with an imagery. So because what happens is things activate us, and we don't know we're activated sometimes. So this has been just an incredible process on so many levels. And I'm very excited about working with Men Law, with Nick and Amber. I feel like when I met Nick and Amber, they pretty much run the whole a lot of stuff over at Menla. And so we're gonna put up the dates, and be on the Facebook. And I'm gonna defer back. By the way, I think the person on here likes your new name, Hillary.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Hillary of God. So, Hillary Lake of God. It's sort of formal, but it's proper as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. I think we're kind of all of God, aren't we? Or all of Goddess?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just putting it out there. Why not?
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. No, it changes everything when you kind of have that, that perspective. It gives you a little. You know, it's really funny because I was talking to a minister. It was a few weeks ago, and I somehow when she was talking, I didn't feel like it was as how do I say it? She was in her voice, in her energy. I kind of missed this other dimension, and I realized because me and you we explore the idea of embodiment, and I think what's sort of missing in the Western approach is that somehow that this experience of God is somehow absent from our day or absent from our moment. In our body, and somehow it's like somewhere else. And it's an older book now, but it's called People of the Lie. People of the Lie, and what Scott Peck. But one of the things he's talking about is that when people lie, it's not an intellectual thing; it's like a soul thing. And I think if you don't know where your soul and your body are,
then you're lying.
I don't know. I guess. Yeah, exactly. And I realized, I realized that when I went to school, there was a lot of lying going on, but I couldn't place my. I was like, oh, but no one explained a lie like that. You know,
they weren't aware necessarily the fact that they're lying either because
no.
They were lied to.
Yes. So let's talk about relational meditation. Relational meditation. What's relational meditation?
Well, that's a good question. I'm sitting with all these things that you've been sharing, and
yes,
and around identity especially seems to be a theme that you're talking about here, and how in relationship our identity shifts and we get to see more perspectives. It's almost like having a more crystalline experience of ourselves, and as a result, we see more, and then we have to grow, and we have to incorporate these other perspectives that we wouldn't have seen before, at least not as deeply, especially in the intimate romantic relationship. And so if you're asking about relational meditation, it seems to me what's happening when we do meditations with other people, with another person, is we're developing this intimacy that allows for a greater perspective of our individual self, because there's this other person there that's reflecting ourselves back to ourselves through their whole being and perspective and consciousness. And it's true that, you know, we're not merged in one body together. That said, we are part of the divine together. We are all connected. And so we have to learn more about reality by witnessing this other being in front of us, or however we're doing the meditation. And of course, that's happening on an ideally daily basis on some level with an intimate partner. And that can get challenging, of course, because all of our lives are being mixed together, and all the good things and all the challenging things. And so my experience is with my partner, when we do meditation together, we get to be present to all of what's there and to find acceptance for it, which is always healing.
Miss Lisa LaRose.
Well, one of the things that I was thinking about, Glenn, and I know I've heard you say this before, is that You know, divorce the patterns, not each other, isn't just for married couples. I think that there are, you know, other types of things in friendships, relationships. I mean, I can see this work even in a corporate environment, people that you work with. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes people have such an ingrained, you know, they see the people that they work with and spend time with more often than they do their family, you know, because they're ingrained. And yes. A lot of the things mm-hmm. are, you know, within, you know, communications and, you know, really taking the time to listen. And wouldn't it be nice in a corporate culture if in the morning they had a little bit of time to meditate? I mean, wouldn't that be before they started their day? They have their morning meetings and then they have a few minutes of meditation. I remember, you know, in high school, I was the president of the broadcasting club. And the first thing we did, you know, after we said the Pledge of Allegiance, we had, you know, 30 seconds of private meditation, whatever that was. Oh. And, you know, so that was every day, you know, that was how, you know, whatever kids think about it in high school for those 30 seconds, but at least, they would have been properly, we would have been properly trained. Maybe we could have used it a little bit more constructively, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But just even setting that intention around that.
Yeah,
you know, what do you find, Hillary, when you're working with groups and sort of bringing mm-hmm. them into an awareness state?
Well, the way that I guide people into meditation is a bit different than how most people do. I can do different practices, and yet I do focus mostly on the experience in the body and a relationship with the earth to help people to really feel themselves and feel supported and held to develop a sense of safety and security, which in our culture, we've largely lost that because we've lost our relationship to the earth in many ways. So I invite people to lie down and to just relax completely. And it's about letting go of a sense of time at all. So 30 seconds is better than nothing. And yet I think, you know, giving people at least
That's a new book title, isn't it?
To, like, actually let go of the stresses and the tensions, I think is a lot better, too. So, and to help people really not think about time. If we're sitting up straight and we have to hold this cross-legged position that for most people in our culture is actually really uncomfortable, we're going to be thinking about how long do I have to do this? Am I doing this right? Am I doing it right? Do people notice that I'm in like pain right now and that this is really uncomfortable and I really don't want to do this? And, you know, the monkey mind is just going to be going and going and going. And so why not just invite people to lie down? And then if they fall asleep, they fall asleep, and that's what they need. It's less about trying to do something, and it's more about letting go and surrendering. And that's been my own process to realizing that meditation is about receiving. And at some point, we'll find ourselves meditating. We'll find ourselves in this place of stillness and openness, receptiveness, and find expansion and maybe even insight.
Did you hear that? That was that new age music guy. He's hanging around playing his stuff in the background. I could feel his vibe right now.
Oh yeah, it was lovely. I thought that was perfect timing.
You see how you did that, Hillary? You just kind of tapped. What was that guy's name again? Rivon. He's got quite the voice there.
That was him.
Yeah. I chomped his name up. But that was the stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you said that, though, Hillary, because a lot of individuals that I work with will all say the same things. I can't meditate, and I will tell them, for me, like a walk in the park with the dogs as a meditation. You know, it's a quiet time for me. A lot of people may not see it that way, but for me, it most definitely is. You know, it's a peaceful time where I can just breathe in, I can walk, I can stop, I can notice things that I might not normally see. You know, it's just, it's a time for me to gather my thoughts and center myself. And, And I have to admit, I am one of those people in a yoga class when they say, you know, if we had to sit up and do a meditation, I would be, you know, thinking, okay, am I done yet? It's not, you know, it's not, it's not that time for me. It's more of a special time, right? You know, not that I can't enjoy a joint meditation with people. I'm probably one of the ones who would fall asleep at some point, come out. But at least I can admit that. Yeah. Be open and honest about
it. Oh, yeah. Me too. I love Shavasana at the end of yoga classes where we just totally go out together. And I, you know, I don't know where I would go. And when I come back, I feel a lot better. And I think that meditation can be like that. Ideally, we are cultivating more consciousness and more awareness about where we are going. So if we need to go to sleep, that's perfect. And being curious about, okay, maybe I'll get more sleep, and so next time I can stay more present and then follow my breath or watch my thoughts or whatever it is that's going on.
All right, this is your built-in meditation break. Don't feel compelled to have to do anything formal. Even with your eyes open, right, you can see things, you can allow your breath. Just notice your breath, just let go right now. Just exhale 3 times, allow a new life, and we'll continue with Vibrant Living. Along with Hillary Lake and Lisa LaRose, I'm Glenn Brooks.
Feed your soul with waves of consciousness on OM Times Radio.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to OM Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Melissa from Michigan. I work an extra part-time job serving lunch at my child's school, but I still can't afford to put food on our table.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
I developed what's called the Vibrant Concept, which I want to tell you about.
Oh, hold on one second. Hello, I'm Glenn Brooks. You're listening to Vibrant Living, along with Hilary Lake, Alicia LaRose, Vibrant Living team members, innovators. We're going to be heading to Menla, and it looks, we're going to let you know the dates. And Menla is M-E-N-L-A. M-E-N-L-A. I knew Lisa would correct me if that wasn't the case. It's Menla. And so Menla is run or owned by Robert Thurman, who's a Buddhist scholar. His daughter, Uma Thurman, I recognize her. He's been really, I guess, a distinguishing voice in some of the, I guess, new awarenesses of bringing Buddhism into our lives. And there's a nice spa there. There's two offshore saunas, and the property's wonderful. So I know what I wanted to bring up. So when we talk about meditation, I find a walk in the park. My big thing these days is to help couples and people become unloaded. I feel most people are overloaded, and out of overloading and a jammed nervous system, they make decisions to hurt their life and their relationships. So I put people on an unloading program, and to help them get beyond burnout, hurriedness, and busyness. So in Chinese medicine, actually, busyness is an illness. So the practical application is, I have them take walks. And the other day I was emphasizing to someone to walk from a fluid body, just feel that the fluid body, feel the fluids are. And this woman actually called me back to tell me she could feel her fluids when I was leaving this message. And so I sometimes think, well, when we become aware of something, it becomes in our, the frequency of the sound. And so part of what I'm inspired about with Menla is I really want a place for people to come and to begin to cultivate these awareness of practices. But they can be very simple. Charles Schroebel, who's a neurologist, wrote a whole book on this notion that it takes 3 seconds, less than 3 seconds, to reset your nervous system. That the system changes very quick. So he was recommending internalized smiling. So I recommended to someone, a man the other day, he's saying to his wife, I said, you know what, if you listen to me, you'll experience deep love with her, and you'll get through a lot of embarrassment. But let your embarrassment come up, because who cares if you're embarrassed, if you experience deep love. I wanted to bring up something for you guys along those lines about changing the brain. So this woman, because we could change our brain. It's an amazing thing. This woman was giving this talk the other day about, she was in a significant, almost car crash. She spun around, the car rolled, and somehow she didn't die. But this man pretty much had sacrificed, I guess somehow he was a truck driver. He parked in a way he could come down and see her, but did put himself at risk. And it changed her whole life, the fact that she saw his eyes and that he asked her how she was. Her life was never the same. She went on to study, what do they call people that unconditionally just do good things? What do they call that? Lisa, what do they call that? What do they call it? No, not do-gooder, thank you.
Words escaping me.
it's not a good term. I love it. Yeah, basically. Basically, these are people that have high social... That's funny. All right. There's another word. It will come. Maybe my call fully clears. So these people, their brains physically are different. So the opposite of those people, the people that are the people that have this, was it autism? That's not autism. Sorry. I'm not going to attempt this right now.
Altruistic?
Yeah, you got it. That's it. Yes.
Okay.
So what she did was, thank you. Do-getters, I like that. Yeah, so the opposite brain was actually psychopaths. So she decided to study the psychopathic brain, and then she also studied how people were affected when they heard about something that was done, you know, that was pretty basically a blessing. Basically, when people begin to practice their lives, right now in this moment, they're divine distributors. Right now in this moment, not later, not till they get to meditation class, not till they go to yoga class, but in this moment. So I got very interested in that. And then I got interested in that we actually, as partners, we're in a pretty deep dojo together. We're in a pretty deep ashram together. And so it's very easy. Someone said to me once that, you know, being with your partner is kind of like poking, you know, needles in their eyes. The opportunity is such that you can experience the kind of depth of love with them you've never had before, ever. The edges is going through that without getting distracted by the content. So a deep relationship is one where you're very aware of the context. You're very aware of the sky, not the clouds. And the opportunity. So as an example, I haven't met a couple yet that has went through the cycle of purification where they can allow this other level of deep love. And that's why I'm really inspired, because it's a brain learning and a soul learning every time I work with people. Because it's just rare. The regular love story is always an ending story. The film I'm working on is actually a new love story. It's a love story of what happens when this couple reignites the love and they come together from that and not the conclusion of the assumption. So I'm very interested. I think, you know, when Gurdjieff was alive, as an example, they couldn't track anything about the brain. There was no research. Like, they didn't know how consciousness would affect the brain. And now couples affect each other's brains. There's one of my favorite books is called The Language of the Heart. And one of his big things in the book is couples, the most educated couples, didn't know how impact they impacted each other, feeling-wise, the physiology. And what they began to learn opened up another passage. This woman called me, and she told me she started doing these sessions with her husband. And she says when they started doing these sessions, it's something called EMDR. It's where you do these eye movements to release trauma. Well, she was doing it on her own. This is a very special woman. She was doing it on her own, but when she did it in sessions with her husband, she loved him past the trauma, the things that hurt him in his life, and she discovered she had a new way of seeing him. It's kind of like what you don't see sometimes. If you could see a person beyond the script and kind of breathe into that, make that relevant, your nervous system will begin to change in relation to them, and they'll feel that. So the obvious is we get upset around each other. What's not so obvious is this capacity to be able to bring out this new quality of love. And in the language of the heart, it was also a physiological level. Actually, couples learn to blow each other's blood pressure. And if you want to get into the juicy end of it, you can talk about in people's sex lives. When they actually make love, deep love, from the deep system, the parasympathetic, it actually regenerates the heart. So this, in some sense, our education, our schooling has been very fragmented. And my intent is to share this with people. And then I'm so happy because the people coming to Menla, they have so much to offer. I mean, I can tell you, being around people that are willing to allow themselves to have a relational perception, it's just a very deep thing. And it's very opening. And that's sort of how I got to this. I practiced. It's one of my practices for what I call vibrant speaking, which is to kind of alchemize, to basically alchemize the thing that's your biggest hurdle, your biggest poison. And so I knew when this happened in my life, it was going to be the most biggest challenge of my life ever. It was, it is. But it opened up something I didn't see. I got to meet people at a deeper level. And I don't know, there's a dimension of life where there's a mystery of it. And to be able to share that relationally, and to I love what you said about the yes, there's a mystery going on, and in business, if you could pause to acknowledge it, that we're in a web of life together, and that as we allow this web to go through us and realize we're in this interconnection to each other, that the reality of that permeates and changes the quality of creativity and wonder in the workplace. So absolutely, divorce dependence on each other. I'm happy to teach and share it. It's very applicable.
You know, Glenn, it's funny, as soon as you segued into another topic, the word came into my mind that you were looking for. It was a good Samaritan. And we're talking, you know, and you're talking about doing altruistic things. You know, one of the things that you will often see with these good Samaritans is they do something and they don't want to be known. They just want, you know, they do what they know is right, and they don't need to be known. They don't need any recognition. It's just a part of who they are.
Yeah.
And I think when you're in a relationship, sometimes we get comfortable. You know, in the beginning, when things are new, we tend to do things. I mean, maybe on some level, we're looking for a recognition. But to get to that place where you can do something, it makes you feel good. You don't need to be noticed. You don't need to tell anybody about it. It just becomes a part of you, just the way breathing does. It's just who you are. And I think to be able to do a practice, you know, whether it's like with Hillary, with movement, where, you know, the breath and the movements, and you know, and then you incorporate other things. Things become just who you are. Everything flows. You know, in a corporate culture, wouldn't that be great? You didn't have to worry about somebody, you know, trying to undermine you. Everybody was working where, you know, we could just, you know, well, you know, I helped her just because it was the right thing to do, not because she makes more money than me or any other thing. You know, I always say that I'm unemployable. I worked in the corporate culture and just, you know, it wasn't who I was. You know, I needed to be helpful just because, and all of those other things. And I'm sure that's why each of you followed the path that you did as well, as did Gurdjieff, and I'm sure many, many other people that we look to. And I think you're starting to see that being reflected. People are really looking for that. I know that we're starting to see more positive news. I think people are really looking for change. And divorcing, I mean, there's been definitely things programmed for a very, very long time. I don't know if, you know, what your thoughts are, Hillary, you know, if something is specifically bubbling for you with what Glenn just shared.
Well, what's coming up for me is in talking about working in the corporate context as well, like, and about the patterns that we're needing to divorce. I think it's so necessary to bring this kind of work into the corporate context, because if we are going to survive as a human race, we need to divorce a lot of patterns. And the corporate world is what's holding us to a lot of those patterns. And it's, in a sense, bringing this work into the corporate context would be undermining, I think, a lot of some of the aspects of what is kind of keeping the corporate world kind of like leveled above the reality of kind of what's falling away or what's falling apart as well in the world, and the reality of so much poverty and so much pain and struggle of so many people. And I'm really interested in what it is to bring mindful embodiment into the corporate context as well, and how to language it in a way that can sell to the corporate world. And also shift these patterns of saying we're up here, we're not down there. You know, we're not like those poor people. We're not like those whoever people. You know, we're different. You know, we get to keep our money and do what we want with it, kind of thing. And you know, you're not going to be able to sell this work by saying, okay, you have to change your mindset around all of that. There is a way to say we are all in this together, and we need everyone in order to move forward together and to be most effective and to live generative lives. And let's see, like, who's not in this context right now? What what feelings, what experience isn't being recognized in this context, in this workplace or in this partnership or whatever the context is. Like, what is being pushed into the shadows? What's not being acknowledged or appreciated? And how can we bring those things up to the forefront and appreciate and acknowledge and move with them? Because they need to be moved. They need to be honored and acknowledged. And then the whole ship can move forward together with much more ease and joy.
I'm just shaking my head. I'm really... Yeah, I mean, the key, yeah, thanks, Hillary. Thanks, Lisa. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Menla. Chris, it's cold. We're still here today. Elijah Precious, enjoy it. Thanks for listening today. And you could go to Vibrant Living Network. It might be down, but it'll be up probably tomorrow. All right, you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks, Lisa.